or grimaces at the action. "Your Majesty, it's good to see you looking so well." Uncle Rafe starts in on him almost immediately about calling a meeting with the Privy Council, and as I sit and listen, taking small sips of water from my glass, I realise that he's stepped into the role his son had, advising the king. Which means he doesn't plan on going back home soon. I wonder how my mother fares all alone, although I doubt she's spared me a second thought since I left. The first course is brought to the table, and my gut grumbles, unable to stomach eating when my insides feel so torn and tossed. I fidget in my chair, so the ache between my legs will spear through me and remind me that Tristan was there. That he cares, even when it feels as though no one else does. It's odd how just the memory of him is enough to bring me comfort. But I welcome it, wanting something to keep me from breaking down and ruining everything I came to Saxham to accomplish. I clear my throat. "Is it true you aren't having a proper service for Timothy?" The words fly from my mouth before I can bite them back, and my uncle shoots me a sharp glare, his fork pausing halfway to his mouth. Michael, who was taking a drink from his glass, places it back on the table and looks at my uncle and then back to me.
"That's correct. We don't think it would be best."
Anger sludges through my veins like mud. "He deserves to be honoured for his service."
"The rebels would see it as a victory," my uncle cuts in. "We cannot give them that satisfaction."
I huff out a breath, my spine straightening. "They already have a victory. They've murdered someone who was doing his job in protecting me."
"Sarah, that's enough," my uncle says.
I lean forward until my ribs bump against the edge of the table. "When he was lying on the dirty ground, grasping my wrists and struggling for air, it was me who had their hands elbow deep in his chest, trying to keep his heart beating. It was me who prayed to God that he would spare him, begging him to take it back." My voice cracks and my fist slams on the table. "To take me instead."
"He was not even supposed to speak with you," Michael says.
I turn toward him, my jaw clenching. "No worries, Your Majesty. Now he never will again." Michael's eyes are wide at my outburst, his jaw muscle tensing. I cover my mouth with a trembling hand, nausea surging through my throat. "I'm sorry. If you'll excuse me, I'm feeling rather ill. I think I need to go lie down."
"Sarah,"
Uncle Rafe starts again. I put a hand out to stop him. "I'm fine, Uncle. Nothing a midday rest can't fix." Shoving from my chair, the wood legs scraping against the floor, I toss my napkin on the ground and flee from the room, worried that if I stay even a moment longer, I'll say things I can't take back. And that's the last thing I want. But I needn't worry, because no one follows. The fire has long since been put out, and I'm sitting in front of it. Yet another layer of sadness drops in my chest. Shayna never came. I'm angry, and honestly, a little afraid that the girl I thought I knew is actually a woman I know nothing of. Serves me right, I suppose, considering she doesn't know much of me. Glancing at the brown floor clock as it ticks against the far wall, I sigh, deciding to focus on something I can control, learning more of the tunnels. The couch cushions groan as I stand, walking from the sitting area over to my freshly made bed. Dropping to my knees, I peek beneath the mattress's frame, my arm stretching until I grasp the corner of a small chest. I pull it toward me and open the top, breathing a deep sigh as I pull out the black ensemble I used to wear when sneaking out at night in silver to take the stolen money from my uncle's safe and put it in Dahlia's hands. I strip out of my nightgown, slipping on the black pantaloons and the long-sleeved black tunic before sitting down on the edge of the bed and lacing up the boots. When I move to the mirror to place my curls back into a bun at the nape of my neck, a sense of calm cascades over my shoulders, feeling like myself for the first time since I arrived in Saxham. Not all women are meant for frilly dresses and fancy crowns that sparkle in the light. Some of us prefer the anonymity that comes along with shadows. Slipping my arms in the black cloak, I put the hood over my head, gripping the edges with my fingers and pulling until it hides my face from view. And then I'm out of the door, already knowing there won't be a new guard there to keep watch. With Xander gone, I'm nothing but an afterthought. My stomach tightens as I make my way to the nearest secret door. And my stomach jolts when voices filter around the corner, sounding as though they're heading in the same direction. I spin around and run as quietly as I can to the end of the hall, hiding behind the far wall so they don't see me. Shayna. My heart falters. And Paul. My brows draw down and my insides curdle with confusion, wondering what it is they're doing together and why they're lurking through the hallways late at night. When they open the secret passageway and step into the castle's tunnels, my stomach drops to the floor. I follow behind them, trailing far enough away where they won't notice I'm there. It takes 10 minutes to reach the end of the tunnels, a small stone staircase leading to a small door that opens to the outside, and they exit, whispering words too low for me to hear. Again, I follow, stepping into the chill of the cloudy night and realizing we're in the middle of the forest. And I have no idea where they're about to go.
Chapter 41. Tristan. It's a very interesting turn of events to have my brother listening to my words as though they're gospel, and it's just more proof that he's truly lost his mind. If I wasn't so fixated on the memory of how my little doe felt wrapped around my cock, maybe I'd find some humor in the irony of the boy who spent his life telling me I wasn't worth the dirt on his shoe, asking me what he should do. Granted, all of this is from my careful manipulation of his hallucinations. I saw a weakness, and I pounced. The rebels are large and growing every day. I have many factions hidden in plain sight. We're everywhere, even in the spots you wouldn't suspect. But I'm not an idiot, and if there's opportunity to strengthen our odds, I will always take it. Which is why I lightly suggested last night that Timothy not have a proper burial, something that Edward could use to sway opinions of the king. People don't do well when one of their own isn't treated with respect. Brother, I'm sorry to bother you, but I didn't know where else to turn. I shake my head, pacing as though the thoughts are plaguing my mind. Out with it, Tristan. I'm busy. He snaps, leaning back in his chair and puffing on a cigar. It's about father, I whisper, glancing around the room as though someone will overhear. This gets his attention, and he sits forward, his brows rising. Has he told you something else? Come to you in a dream again? I hesitate for a few long moments. He has, but I don't know. Tell me, he hisses. In my dream, the King of Andalasia was sending troops to our southern border. Michael grips the roots of his hair. What? You think they mean to wage a war? Blowing out a deep breath, I shake my head. I don't know, Michael. It's probably nothing. Fuck! I kick the wooden chair leg. I feel like I'm going crazy. No? He shoots to his feet, walking around the desk until he's in front of me. He grips my shoulder tight. You're not crazy. We are not crazy. I nod, running my palm over my mouth. Did he say when? Shrugging, I glance up at him from under my brows. I can't be sure. Michael chews on the inside of his lip. We can't tell the council of this. They won't believe it. Michael, you're the king. This is an absolute monarchy, not a democracy, I say. Don't let others make decisions as if Farsa blood runs through their veins. It doesn't. His eyes flare, his chest puffing out as my words sink into his psyche. We'll send troops to the southern border, just to be safe. Brother, I think that's the right choice. Edward stares at me as I lean against the tavern's bar top, lighting a joint and bringing it to my lips, saddened that I can't still smell Sarah on my fingertips. Every cell in my body is craving to hunt her down and chain her to my side. It's unhealthy, this obsession, but it's here all the same, and I've never been known for my solid state of mental health. You seem different, Edward states, sipping from a pint of ale. Do I? I smirk. Must be because we're on the verge of everything I've ever wanted. My brother has gone mad, Edward. He believes I see the ghost of our father, who whispers warnings in my ear. And this time tomorrow, much of the king's military will be on their way to the southern border to guard against a fictitious threat of war. Edward's grin stretches across his face. And in the end? I smile. In the end, I shall wear the crown either way, preferably with a brand new council, not filled with people who disrespected me as sport my entire life. Victory is ours, Your Highness. I can feel it. Several of my men are already teetering on the edge. They aren't happy with how things are. He claps his hands together before taking another sip of his drink. And the boys in the basement, who attempted to kill Lady Beatro? What would you have me do with them? My blood boils as I think of the rebels who took it upon themselves to stage an assassination. Keep them locked up. I plan to give them as a gift. To who? I smile. To Sarah, of course. His eyes alight in recognition, but before he can say anything else, the door to the tavern bursts open and Shayna walks in, her eyes skimming the area until they land on us. A smile breaks across her face when she sees Edward, and he straightens from where he was leaning against the bar. And then, just as I instructed, Paul Wartegg follows behind her, his gaze growing wide as he takes in the 36 people eating and drinking at the tables, and his mouth dropping open when they snag on the iron cage constructed in the far corner, with an unconscious Xander chained to the wall and on display. I stub out the end of my joint and saunter over to them, adopting a warm grin on my face. Welcome, Paul. I clasp my hand on his back. I'm so happy to see Shayna convinced you to come. It's you, he whispers. You're the Rebel King? My grin widens. I am many things, but right now I'm just a friend. I prod him forward, and Shayna breaks away, moving to where Edward is and sinking into his arms, their lips locking in a long kiss. I'm glad you're here, I say to him, if only to see what your months of hard work, providing the food that makes its way here, has done. My hand waves over the tables, pointing to the random faces. If it wasn't so late, you'd see small children getting their first meal in days. You'd see mothers holding babes to their chest while they cry in relief from what you've given them when the monarchy has failed to provide. Turning toward him, I lock him in my stare. I want you to know how incredibly sorry I am about Timothy. His eyes narrow, shoulders stiffening as he meets my gaze. It isn't spoken about, not out loud, but I know of him and Timothy, of stolen moments and secret nights, of love that would have ended in a much worse fate than a gunshot to the chest had anyone found out. And while I don't mourn Timothy's passing, for one of the first times in my life, I can empathize with the thought of his death. I understand the pain of having to love in secret, and I do not wish to ever endure the agony of reuniting with the other half of your soul, only to have it unjustly ripped away. It's hard enough being told they aren't meant for you when they're the only thing that's ever felt like yours. I place my hand on his shoulder. I promise you, Paul, the ones responsible will pay. They won't give him a funeral, he hisses, his voice low and tortured. I nod, drawing my brows down. Then we will have one for him here. A single tear drips down his face, and he wipes it away. I pretend I don't see. I didn't give them this order, but I bear responsibility all the same. I believe you. He clears his throat, speaking the next part in a whisper. I don't think for one second that you would allow any harm to come to Lady Beatro. My chest cramps, hoping we aren't as obvious as he's making it seem, but I smile. And you would be correct. I never came here before, because I refused to pick a side, he says. But I can no longer stand by and watch as a corrupt monarchy destroys our people. Gloria Terra is a proud country, and we deserve a king who will bring us glory, not shame. Satisfaction, heavy and thick, rolls through my blood like molasses. Do I have your loyalty, Paul Wartegg? His eyes flash, and he drops on bended knee. I hold out my hand, and he grips my fingers, kissing the top of my lion's head ring. I swear it. Together we rule, divided we fall. I whisper. It's my honor to welcome you to the rebellion.
Chapter 42. Sarah B. Icy cold shock pours through my veins as I watch a room full of people fall on bended knee, one right after the other, spurred on by Paul, who was just kissing Tristan's hand in subservience, and I'm numb. Tristan is the rebel king. Of course he is. How could I have been so blind? I followed Shayna and Paul here, all the way to the Shadowed Lands, where the lights disappear from street corners and sleek roads turn into broken pavement, potholes so big they could fit a small house. The buildings all have dirty windows, or boards in place of glass. And while silver has been impoverished for years, this is beyond anything I've ever seen. I'm not sure what I expected when I peered through the crack in the door of the Elephant Bones Tavern. But it wasn't this. Anything but this. My eyes scan over the people, my heart screaming and spitting in the centre of my chest, but I ignore the pain, refusing to admit to myself that the man I've fallen for is the one who murdered my father. The tavern itself is dingy and dark. Worn wood panels and a strong scent of mothballs and mould, but the atmosphere is upbeat, as if they know they're on the cusp of something great, something more. They set a large iron-barred cage up in the far corner, and I squint my eyes, confusion running through me at the sight. Why on earth is that there? I try to get a better view, but I can't open the door any farther without the risk of being seen, and Tristan's tall frame blocks me. But then he moves, and I see the hunched figure of my cousin, bloodied and chained, unconscious against the wall. My stomach somersaults. He's alive. Caged like a bird and missing a hand, but still alive. My stomach rolls, the vengeance in my heart growing brighter. Tristan turns then, walking away from Paul and moving toward the front of the room with a shoddy raised platform and a single high back chair sitting in the centre. He walks straight to the middle, a god among his men, and speaks. Friends, his arms rise to the side. The time is near. You've all put incredible faith in me, and it's time to return the favour. A new dawn is on the horizon. Cheers ring out across the tables. No longer will we be cast to the Shadowed Lands while the rich and perfect get to live in the light. It is our time to shine. More yells and hollers, a few people throwing bits of trash into the iron cage that houses Alexander. My stomach cramps. Aching to turn away, to make this nightmare disappear. Yet I'm glued to the spot, unable to do anything other than watch. His charisma is astounding, and the more his words flow from his mouth to the rest of the room, you can feel the energy shift, as if he's moulding it into whatever shape he desires and feeding it back to them like it was always theirs. It's the most incredible sight I've witnessed, and I have no doubt that if he desires the crown, it will end up on his head. He speaks so eloquently, so mesmerizing, that even I fall under his spell. My heart beats faster, my breathing comes harsher, and excitement wells up in the center of my stomach, expanding through my limbs until I picture what it would be like to stand at his side. But then I remember where I am, and who he is, and the feeling disappears, replaced with bile that turns my stomach from the inside out. I skim the surroundings again, moving over the people until my eyes land on Shayna, her arms around the neck of a rebel in the king's uniform. I rack my brain, trying to remember his name, but come up blank. She's a fool. The same kind I have been, losing myself in the arms of a man. A lying, pathetic excuse of a man. My legs ache from my crouched position, and I shift on the balls of my feet, that ever-present ache flaring to life between my legs. Only this time, it doesn't bring comfort. I can hardly stand to look at him, but I force my eyes there anyway, maybe to prove that I can live through the worst kind of betrayal, or maybe the masochist in me wants to live in the pain as I try to come to terms with the fact that despite everything, the one person I thought I could trust turned out to be my worst enemy. He licked my tears and told me I was his, right after he sent men to kill me. My chest squeezes until the blood vessels burst, exploding in a fury until all I can taste is the sour notes of betrayal. The rebel king. The scarred prince. My hand flies to my mouth to stifle the scream. I let him see the darkest parts of me. Allowed him to mark me and hurt me, and I begged for it while I rubbed his cum into my skin and prayed to God it would brand my soul. My teeth grit as hatred, black and true, burns through me until I shake, violence pounding in my ears. I've done many things that will keep me from the gates of heaven. I've come to terms with my sins, giving up my faith long ago in order to seek vengeance. But right now, I feel as though I've truly betrayed my father's memory for the first time. I slept with a farsar. But worse than that, I fell for the man responsible for his death. My heart trembles and cracks, the jagged edges slicing through tendons as they fall to my feet, until nothing remains but a blackened hole that almost knew what it felt like to fall in love. Tristan's head snaps to where I am, green eyes piercing as his head tilts. Jumping to my feet, I turn and flee, adrenaline pumping like acid through my muscles as I run back the way I came, promising my father's ghost I won't forget why I came. Not again. I will eradicate the Farsar family and kill the rebel king, no matter how much it may break me.
Chapter 43. Tristan. My brother asked if I was a man of faith. I am a man of many things, but faith is something that is best suited when it's placed within yourself, instead of seeking for it in other people. Other people disappoint. I saw her. It was quick, just a flash, but I'd know those dark eyes anywhere. Everything in me demanded to follow, to hunt her down and sneak into her room like I did the other night. But something is telling me I shouldn't. Not yet. So I went to her cousin instead. Xander has been with us since the night of the engagement ball, naturally. And in the time since, he's been on display, beaten and abused, the open wounds growing infected and causing what I'm sure is an immeasurable amount of pain. I imagine sepsis will set in soon, eating him from the inside out. I splash a bucket of water on his face, rousing him. He looks around, but I've tied him to a wooden slab in the tavern's backyard. I secured both of his legs with rope, and his good hand as well. He jerks, but realizes quickly he isn't going anywhere. Even if he was free to move, he's far too weak to escape. "Good morning, Alexander," I smile.
"I've told you,"
he mumbles, his tongue peeking out of his dry mouth to wipe over his cracked and bleeding lips. He coughs before he continues.
"Everything I know."
Tisking, I shake my head. "Come now, Xander, we both know that's not true. You haven't told me anything."
"Just kill me," he whispers. "Please."
I place down the empty bucket at my feet, moving to where a gallon of kerosene sits at the end of the table. "You believe you've paid your penance?" He nods. "And what were your crimes?" He presses his lips together, turning his face away. Everything he does is in slow motion, as if he doesn't have the strength to exert the proper amount of energy. I step up next to him, staring down at his beaten and bloodied face. "I tell you what, I'll be honest with you first. That way it's more of a tit for tat." Blowing out a breath, I crack my neck. "Honestly, you're going to die today. Phew, it feels good to get that off my chest. Now you go." His eyes flare, but he stays silent. "All right then." I raise the gallon above his torso, tilting the bottle until it pours onto his skin, dousing his flesh and pooling into the wood at his sides. He shivers when it hits. "This isn't for me, you know," I say, moving my way around his body, until I cover every single inch of him in the liquid. "This is your chance to confess, and hope that God will grant mercy on your soul." He scoffs, but it turns into a cough, the sound wheezy and wet, as if sickness has already taken his lungs.
"You're no priest."
I lean in close. "But I can be your savior."
"Are you going to kill her as well?"
he asks. My chest cinches up tight. There's only one her I imagine he'd be speaking of, and she isn't someone I have any intention of harming. "I'm afraid you'll need to be more specific."
"My cousin."
I clench my jaw, and he doesn't miss the movement, a slight smirk breaking through his fatigue.
"You don't hide it well, you know, your sick fascination with her."
He coughs again.
"You're lucky your brother is a complete imbecile."
Irritation bleeds through me.
"Do not speak of her to me,"
I spit. He laughs.
"I brought her here to kill you, fool."
Something dark settles into my chest at his words, although I don't doubt that he's telling the truth. I've always known there was something hiding just beneath her surface, nefarious acts by an innocent face. It explains the daggers on her thigh, the fire in her breath, and the eyes that stare through cracked doors and starless nights. But until last night, I'm certain she hadn't known I was the Rebel King. I wonder if that makes her want to kill me more or less. My cock hardens at the thought of her ire. "That doesn't surprise me at all," I laugh. "Be honest though, Xander. Who put her up to it?" Reaching into my pocket, I grab the lucifer matches, picking one out and holding it above his head. "Tell me quickly, or I will light this fire and burn every inch of your skin. And then I'll put it out, so we can play this game over and over, until the flames eat your muscle and char your nerves." I stare at the matchstick. I hear it's the most dreadful of ways to go. He purses his lips, and I sneer, moving to light the flame.
"You're such a bore." "My father!"
he yells, his voice sounding hoarse and painful.
"She was supposed to rid the world of you and your pathetic excuse of a brother, so the Beatro line could finally take their rightful place." My head falls back with my laughter. You would never be next in line for the throne. We have the support of the Privy Council, he rasps, his eyes swinging to the match in my hand. Now this surprises me, my brows shooting to my hairline. A coup d'etat, then? I click my tongue. Colour me impressed. Sighing, I bring the match to the box, the sound of it striking against the side like music to my ears. One more confession, Xander. I lean in, the heat of the flame sending a tendril of excitement through my veins. Was it you who poured poison down my father's throat? He swallows, resignation settling heavy in his eyes. No, that was your brother, he says. I'm not surprised, but the betrayal stings all the same. Your mother and I simply nudged him in the right direction. Nodding, I raise my hand above him. May God have mercy on your soul, Alexander, for I shall give you none. The kerosene lights quickly as I drop the match, his skin catching fire and blazing high into the sky. I move back, closing my eyes and relishing in the tortured screams, rage swirling like a hurricane in the center of my gut.
Chapter 44. Sarah B. My blades are sharp. I haven't changed my clothes since last night, when my world flipped inside out. Instead, I've been sitting in front of the fire, my mind replaying everything I know to be true. And the only conclusion I've come to is that I'm tired of the waiting game, of waiting for direction from others who I'm not sure I can trust. I no longer wish to play the perfect part of wanting to be queen. I just want them dead. It's the only thing that pulses through my insides, pumping from the space where the beating organ should be, half convinced that my twisted need for vengeance is the only reason it still beats at all. Can you die of a broken heart? I do not care for politics or preserving the integrity of the crown, all things my uncle told me were necessary so the country wouldn't break apart at the seams when the Farsar dynasty fell. But I've had all night to replay his words in my brain, and things just aren't adding up. If I wasn't already crushed into 1,000 pieces, maybe I'd feel shame for how easily I've been manipulated. As it is, I only feel the emptiness that comes after accepting disappointment. A thick fog rolls through the trees and blankets the cold ground. Dewdrops forming on the blades of grass as I make my way out of the main castle and across the court into the cathedral. I'm sure today will be my last day on this earth. I have no delusion that it will end in anything other than death. I welcome it with open arms, as long as I take down the others who have wronged me. Even so, I wish to pray. Not for absolution. There is no remorse in my soul, but for clarity, purpose. My fingers wrap around the cool metal handles to the front of the church, and I wrench open the doors, stepping inside the expansive room, my gaze locking on a lone figure, standing at the front of the altar, his hands in his pockets, and his tattoos on full display as he stares up at the sculpture of Jesus on the cross. Tears spring to my eyes, my chest squeezing so tight it feels like it will snap me in half. I swallow them back down, refusing to let them fall. As quietly as possible, I slip a blade from the inside of my cloak, pressing it against my trembling palm. My boots echo off the walls as I make my way down the centre of the pews, and there's no way he doesn't hear me coming. I expect for him to turn, to say something, do something. But he doesn't. I grip the dagger as I continue my trek toward him, and my stomach rolls, nausea teasing through my middle and surging up my throat when I stop a few paces behind. Do it, my mind whispers. Reach out your hand and plunge the blade into his skin. It would be so easy,
letting him bleed on the cold church floor as I stand over him and watch while the traitorous life leaves his body. The thought of it makes my insides quake, and I feel weak for struggling with the decision. I raise my hand, swallowing the bile that rises along with it, the cavity in my chest cracking down the center as I bring the knife closer to his back. Somehow, I knew you'd find me here. My hand freezes, heart shooting to my throat. He spins around, those stupid, perfect, jade-green irises staring at me as though I'm the only thing he sees. And it sends rage careening through my body, hating that even now he's so convincing with his lies. One of us is always finding the other, I say through clenched teeth. I wonder why that is. He smiles, although it doesn't reach his eyes. My fingers tighten around my knife, and his gaze swings to where it's held in my hand. Are you going to kill me, little doe? My stomach flips, and I bring the dagger high, pointing it at his chest, the weapon shaking in my palm. I swallow and clench my jaw, my chest burning from the thought. Do it, do it, do it. But my hand stays still. His Adam's apple bobs as he steps in close, the tip of the blade pressing into him. I do not wish to see you fail, he whispers, even at this. My broken heart stutters, emotion exploding through me until I can barely think through the turmoil. You don't get to say that to me, I spit, pressing the weapon farther into his chest. Don't pretend you care when all you've ever done is lie. Ma petite menteuse, the world is full of lies. The nickname flows from his tongue and spears through my middle. The pain so intense it makes me want to die. His palm reaches out, slipping along my skin. His fingers wrapping around my wrist, causing heat to flare up the length of my arm. The truth is, I am yours. Wholly, inexplicably, painfully, unconditionally. He moves my hand until the dagger presses against his throat. And if you need to sacrifice my soul so you're able to live with yours, then do it. I suck in a shaky breath, hot tears cascading down my cheeks as my mind wars with my heart, confusion muddling up my thoughts until my vision blurs and I can't see straight. Do it. This is a trick, I hiss, pushing the blade until it nicks his skin. He smiles, his fingers stroking along my arm, causing goosebumps to sprout in their wake. No tricks, little doe. Not this time. Not with you. My face scrunches up. You killed my father! I cry out, the blade cutting into his flesh until blood trickles down the front of his throat. Still, he doesn't move. You tried to have me killed! How can you stand there and profess the way you do when all you've ever done is cause me pain? My voice breaks and I heave a staggered breath. My words are anguished, like his hand has reached into the deepest pits of my being and wrought them forcibly from my soul. His palm glides up the length of my arm, over my chest, and to the front of my neck until he's cupping my face, his fingers rubbing against my cheek. I close my eyes as I lean into the touch, sick as a dog that I'm unable to resist the comfort, even as my dagger is seconds away from ending his life. It isn't fair, I whisper, my free hand gripping at the fabric of his shirt. It isn't fair for you to do this to me. Why did it have to be you? He lets out a humorless laugh. You think I wished for you? His grip tightens against my jaw. I would scourge the earth if I thought it would erase you from my brain. My chest twists, agony pouring through my veins. The problem is, Sarah, there is no erasing you. And now, you're part of me. One that I can't snuff out, no matter how much I may try.
He steps in closer, forcing more blood to seep from his throat.
And I'm part of you, too. Even if you hate that, it's so.
His other hand flies up, twisting my arm away until it moves from his neck, and I gasp, my stomach somersaulting, expecting him to attack. But he drops to his knees instead, his arms splaying wide at his sides.
I am nothing if I'm not yours.
His jaw tenses, water lining his lower lid until it spills over, a single tear tracing the raised flesh of his scar and dripping off his chin.
So do it. Kill me, Sarah. Put me out of this constant purgatory of needing you without having you.
My throat swells until I can hardly breathe, indecision weaving through me as his words leak through the cracks of my shoddy foundation and bleed into the crevices of my soul.
I will die happily if it's what will bring you peace,
he rasps, thick emotion bleeding into his tone. A sob breaks free from the deepest parts of my chest, echoing around the cathedral chambers, mocking my pain as it reverberates against my ears.
Weak. Sarah, do it.
Give me a reason, I say instead. One good reason why I should let you live.
His eyes flare. Because I love you.
I drop the knife. The sound is loud as it clatters to the ground, but I barely hear the noise because the moment I let go, Tristan is reaching, his hands grabbing my body and dragging me into his lap, fisting the back of my hair as he consumes my mouth, my lips, my tongue, my soul. I cry out against him, sinking into his hold, hating myself for being so weak, but loving the way his touch soothes the pain.
Chapter 45. Tristan. Her touch is the sweetest surrender. I decided long before ending up here that if she wished for me to die, I would lie down at her feet. I have no interest in fighting her, no interest in living if she doesn't wish for me to be. No longer do I thirst for the throne, no more do I wish for vengeance on those who have wronged me. It all pales in comparison to her. Blood seeps down my neck from where her blade nicked my skin, and my cock pulses from her violence. She's an absolute vision in her rage, and when she drops the knife and falls into my arms, my chest implodes. Show me your pain, little doe. Give it to me so you don't bear it alone. I rasp against her mouth as I suck down her cries. My hands claw at her clothing, and she gives as good as she gets until we end up bare with her in my lap, fabrics tossed to the side, shredded and in forgotten piles. My dick slides between her pussy lips, desperate to sink inside of her. I fist her hair, pulling until her back bows like a pretzel, the ends of her curly strands grazing against the floor until her breasts are exposed, dark pink nipples begging to be sucked. I lean down like a ravenous animal and wrap my mouth around her pebbled flesh, growling when her taste explodes on my tongue, and she grinds her hot cunt along my shaft. Tristan, she pleads, her juices running down the length of me and pooling on the polished tiled floor of the cathedral. Please, I release her nipple with a pop, sliding my tongue up her chest until I'm sucking on her neck, bringing the blood to the surface, not caring if I leave a mark, desperate to show the world that she belongs to no one else but me, to mark her skin like she's marked my soul. Someone could walk in at any time, but I don't give a damn. Let them watch. This isn't love. This is obsession. It's madness. It's salvation. Shh. I move my lips until they brush against hers. I know what you need. I let go of her hair, moving both of my hands to grip her hips, and I raise her up, my cock angry and throbbing beneath her. And then her wet heat encases me from root to tip, her soft walls hugging every single ridge of my dick until my abs tense, and I see stars just from the feel of being surrounded by her. Her head flies back as she moans, rotating her hips in a figure eight, every motion making me leak. She rides me so good, and this time it's her who rips me by the hair, the sting making me groan as her lips work their way down the front of my neck, sucking when they reach the thin cut on my throat. I throb inside of her. "Yes," I hiss, bucking up and collapsing on my elbows, her body following as she continues to lick at the wound she made. "You filthy girl, riding my cock and licking up my blood like you're starved for me." She moans again, the sound vibrating through me, and then she's moving until her back is straight, and her hands are cupping her breasts and tweaking the nipples until they stiffen into hard peaks. My abdomen clenches tight as I watch her throw her head back and squeeze her eyes shut, wondering how it's possible she exists, half convinced that I've gone mad and she's nothing more than a figment of my imagination. Suddenly the feeling is too much, and I shoot forward until our chests brush, her hips faltering in their rhythm. My fingers grip her cheeks. "Look at me." Her perfect dark eyes spring open, and Christ, it makes me feel like the luckiest man to have her in my lap, and on my cock, and in my goddamn veins. "Did you really think I would ever harm you?" I punctuate my question with a sharp thrust into her slick heat, keeping myself pressed against her as she rotates her swollen core against my groin, her body shaking as her walls flutter around my dick. A tear escapes the corner of her eye and trails down her cheek, and I lean in without thought, my tongue swiping out and licking it away. Her sorrow is now my sorrow. Her pain is now my pain. "I will torture and maim any person who dares to even think your name," I speak against her ear, holding her face against me while I continue to fuck her hard and slow. She lets out a whimper, nodding her head as she leans in to claim my lips again in a bruising kiss, and my heart falters, needing to feel her deeper, wanting to somehow dig my way beneath her skin and stay there for eternity. My hands leave her face and grab onto her hips instead, pushing her down until every single inch of my cock is buried deep inside of her. But still, it's not enough. I lift her off me, my shaft engorged and glistening with her arousal, raging as it escapes the warmth of her. Wrapping my arm around her waist, I spin her until she's bent over on all fours, her elbows on the edge of the raised dais. I sit back on my heels and soak in the vision, committing it to memory so I can tattoo it on my skin. Her pretty little pussy is exposed, and she's leaned down as if she's bowing in prayer, the stained glass windows sending sprinkles of color across her perfect creamy skin, and the deep wood of the crucifix looming heavily over our sins. I move forward, slipping my fingers inside of her needy cunt, curling them forward to find that soft, spongy spot that will make her come undone. "Should I punish you for your lack of faith?" I ask, spreading my fingers apart before bringing them back together and curling them again. She groans, her head dropping onto the backs of her hands, which push the cheeks of her ass out toward me. They're begging me to turn them red. So I do. I slip my fingers from inside of her and use that same hand, slick with her juices, to whip across her skin, the crack resounding off the high arches of the church's ceilings. Heat collects at the base of my spine, and I have never been harder than I am right now, watching her skin ripple and turn pink from my hand. Her fingers scramble for purchase at the base of the altar, and her nails scratch against the floor. "You've been a very bad girl, Sarah." My hand rubs over my palm print, and she purrs, pushing herself farther into my hold. Crack!
I smack her ass again, my cock leaking pre-ejaculate onto the floor. It's filthy, and a thrill rushes through my veins as I imagine people kneeling right here as they take communion. Groaning, my free hand grips the base of my shaft, holding back the urge to explode from the thought alone. I push forward until the purple head of my length slides along the outside of her core, hitting her sensitive bud. I bring my hand down a third time, and she yelps, wetness seeping from her hole and onto the skin of my dick. My lips drag kisses up her spine as I lean over her, fisting her hair in my hand and wrenching her head back, forcing her body to rise until she's flush against me, my breath blowing in her ear. So pliable and submissive when you're on your knees and begging for my marks, I whisper. Her body trembles, her thighs tightening as she pushes against me, jerking me off with her pussy lips. Back and forth she glides, rubbing herself on my straining erection, making my stomach tense with the need to bury myself as far inside of her as I can go. Tell me you're mine, I demand. My hand moves from her hair around to grasp the front of her throat, her back rubbing against my chest and creating a delicious friction. I thrust my hips forward, my eager cock throbbing. I'm a desperate man, Sarah. My fingers tighten around her throat, my other hand wrapping around her waist and sliding down until I find her center, my thumb pressing against that perfect, sweet, swollen bundle of nerves that's begging for me to rub against it until she blacks out from the pleasure. Tell me, I repeat, and I'll make you come so hard you'll need me to piece you back together. She sucks in a breath, and even the sound of her sigh sends arousal racing through me so fiercely that I bite my cheek until it bleeds. Yours, she whispers. I slide inside of her with one solid thrust. Both of us groan, and I start a punishing pace, my balls slapping against her cunt and my hips clapping against the red and tender cheeks of her ass. My eyes drink her up, and heat coils around my entire body, making me wild with the need to come inside of her, just a little, just to know what it's like. My balls draw up until they're almost level with the base of my shaft, and I lean forward, rutting into her like an animal, my knees scraping against the stone floor until they bleed. Oh my God! She cries out, her body vibrating. Is it possible to be jealous of God? Because when his name leaves her lips, I want to slit my wrists and fly up to his kingdom just to burn it to the ground. My hand cracks against the flesh again, harder this time, enraged that she would dare call his name when it's me breaking her apart. Angry that she would think to kill me before she gave me the pleasure of diving into her sweet cunt one last time. You say my name when you're coming around my dick, ma petite menteuse. No one else's. I wrap my arm around her waist, squeezing tightly and running the tips of my fingers down until they slip through her core, pinching her clitoris until she screams. Tristan! She cries out again, her walls slicking with her cum as she tenses around my cock. That's right, little doe. It's me making you crazy. Only me. Only ever me. And then she explodes, my name pouring from her lips. And that's all I can handle, my muscles coiling tight and my vision blanking out as thick jets of cum spew from my tip, pulsing as I coat the inside of her. My fingers dig into her hips, and I glance down, watching as thick white gobs seep out of her pussy and glide back down the shaft of my dick. It's the most beautiful sight I've ever seen. Panting and spent, I collapse on top of her back, leaving lazy kisses along her spine, and knowing without a doubt that she's the only thing that's ever mattered, and the only thing that ever will.
Chapter 46, Sarah B. Tristan's fingers trail up my arms, his front pressed against my naked back as we lie in his bed. It's the first time I've been in his room, but it's exactly as I imagined it would be. Rich burgundy furniture and black silk sheets. Remnants of his cum sticks to the inside of my thighs, but I'm too exhausted to clean it up. My mind and body waging a war inside of me, collecting the last particles of my energy and grinding it to dust. My arse is raw and my emotions are spread thin, and I still feel unsettled. But I won't lie to myself. I can't kill him, even though I know I should. Whether that makes me a selfish woman or a weak one, I'm not sure. Maybe it makes me both. "What happened to Timothy?" he blurts. My lungs cramp up tight. "I didn't send them there," he continues. "I expressly forbade them to touch you." His words trickle through me and root around in my chest, trying to find a place to settle. I believe him. And that probably makes me the stupidest woman to ever live. But if he feels even a fraction of what I feel for him, then I don't doubt for a moment he never meant to harm me. I held a blade to his jugular and still couldn't follow through. "My father was my best friend," I blurt out, rolling on my back until I'm caged between his arms. "He taught me from a young age that just because I was a girl, that didn't mean I needed to be meek and mild." Tristan smirks. "He taught you well." I narrow my eyes, swallowing around the sickness that talking about my father causes in the depths of my gut. "Yeah, well, he was a duke. Did you know that?"
"I did."
He nods, his fingertips tracing along the edge of my hairline. "He loved our people. So when the funds stopped coming, the businesses shut down and the people lost their homes, he was sick over it." I swallow. "He used to hand me bits of money he could scrounge together and warm wool clothes and send me out in the thick of night to take them to people in need."
"Sounds like a great man."
"He was." The knot swells in my throat. "When he died, the grief overwhelmed me. But more than that, I remember drowning in anger."
"I know that feeling well," he replies.
"All he wanted was to ask for help." My teeth clench. "He travelled here to Saxham and bent the knee, all to beg for your brother to just see us, because for so many years we'd been brushed aside and forgotten." My hand reaches up to cup Tristan's face, trailing over the raised edges of his scar, feeling the ridges and marred flesh beneath the pads of my fingers. He flinches, but he doesn't pull away. Instead, he leans into it,